the book of Judges. Book of Judges. We'll be looking at chapter 6 and chapter 7. Book of Judges, of course, covers the history of basically the first 350 years of Israel in the land of Canaan. Very, very dark period in their history. The tone of the history is set in chapter 1, where we read of Israel's failure to drive out the enemies of God from Canaan. And the book is basically the record of that failure to drive out the Canaanites. By the way, we're still paying for that failure today. The overall result of the failure is seen in Judges 2 and verse 3. They shall be as thorns in your sides, and their gods shall be a snare unto you. So the era of Judges was a time of sin, time of instability, a time of oppression. It's really the tragic sequel of the book of Joshua. In the book of Joshua, we see a life of spiritual conquest. But in the book of Judges, we see life trapped in a cycle of failure. Throughout the book, there's a five-fold cycle that is repeated seven times. First, the Israelites would forget God's goodness to them, and they would begin to worship Baal, the gods of the Canaanites. Secondly, God would give them into the hands of their enemies, using the surrounding nations to oppress them. Then, of course, the Israelites would cry out unto God for deliverance. And then God would raise up a judge, a military leader, to deliver them. And then when the judge died, they would return to Baal worship. And this is how they lived. And again, that cycle is repeated seven times throughout the book of Judges. So it was a very dark period in Israel's history. Now there were 13 judges. In this message, we want to glean from the fifth of those judges, Gideon. And we all know, we're all familiar with Gideon. He's one of the better known of the judges. In the era of Gideon, we find much instruction. We find much encouragement for the days in which we live. We don't have a specific text verse, but we do want to just look at chapter 6 and verse in chapter 7. The subject is, in the day of unfavorable odds and percentages. The day of unfavorable odds and percentages. First of all, consider the circumstances of Gideon's day. Again, it was a time of widespread sin. We read in Judges 6 and verse 1, "And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord." So God's people were in sin. They had turned, and they had departed from God. They were moving in a different direction than the Lord. They were following the ways of the heathen. They were living in opposition to the Lord, and they were living in rebellion against God. The truth is, they became entangled in the sins of their day. And they were living now under the mastery and under the control and under the power, under the sway of sin. And they're weighted down by sin. This would happen over and over and over again in the book of Judges. The dreadful extent of their sinful ways is seen when the Lord instructed Gideon to tear down the altar of Baal that belonged to his father. And Gideon did so. And to show you how far God's people had gone into sin, they were greatly disturbed when Gideon tore down that altar of Baal. In fact, when they found out that it was Gideon that had done this, they said to Gideon's father, there in Judges 6 and verse 30, "Bring out thy son, that he may die." What has he done? He tore down an altar of Baal. And God's people were so disturbed that they wanted to kill him. Gideon's father, verse 31, and we can get stuck here, but we're not going to, asked a question to these who wanted to kill his son. "Will ye plead for Baal?" That speaks volumes. Will ye plead for Baal? That is, are you going to make an argument for Baal? That's the condition that God's people had succumbed to. So it was a time of widespread sin. We see it was a time of oppression because of this sin. Again, in Judges 6 and verse 1, "They did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian 7 years. Now, the Midianites were a roving band of a very warlike people. They had no settled home. They simply roamed from one place to another, stealing. Wherever they went, they stole. They would strip the entire country during the harvest season. They would drive off the cattle and the sheep. They would sell the stolen goods to caravans of traders. The Israelites would then plant new crops, grow more fruit, raise more stock, only to have the Midianites come back the next year and do the same thing. And this had been going on for 7 years. We read of their plight there in verses 2 through verse 6. And we'll not read that for time's sake, but from that we see that the people, God's people, were so terrorized by the Midianites that many of them had to leave their homes and were living in dens and caves. Now prior to this, Deborah and Barak had delivered the Israelites from the oppression of the Canaanites. And Israel for 40 years had peace. But once again, they abandoned God, and now for the last 7 years, they live their lives in anguish, in suffering, in pain, in sorrow. 7 years, they've had their crops stolen, their cattle driven off. And again, many of them are now living in caves. Their lives are marked by weariness. Their lives are marked by distress. Chaos fills their lives. And they are fearful. So now their lives are exasperating. So it is with many today. They get trapped in sin, and life becomes exasperating. Notice the state of Gideon during this time. In verses 11 and 12 of chapter 6, he's threshing wheat in some cave. Why is he doing it in a cave? Because he's seeking to hide his produce from the Midianites. So from this, we see that Gideon was living a life of stress, was living a life of uneasiness, was living a life of nervousness and intimidation of an enemy power. From the response that he gave to the Lord in verse 13, notice what he said. And Gideon said unto him, O my Lord, if the Lord be with us, why then is all this fault befallen us? And where be all his miracles which our fathers told of us, saying, Did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord hath forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites. From that answer, we see that Gideon is downcast. Gideon is discouraged. He's disappointed. He's frustrated. He's restless. And he possesses a spirit of hopelessness, an attitude of defeat. Gideon is living under the control of the circumstances. When we first see Gideon, he's living under the control of his circumstances. Also, concerning Gideon, we learn from verse 25, and we've already mentioned this, but his father had an altar of Baal. So here's a man whose family has gone in the way of its heretical and blasphemous surroundings. That's the condition of Gideon at that time. But now we want to notice that God had a remnant. Gideon was part of that remnant. So in this dark and distressful time, God would call and God would raise up Gideon. And eventually he would sift the army that God instructed him to bring together. It is in the sifting of this army that we're all familiar with that we see the remnant that God would use in those dark and oppressive days. First of all, God would work in Gideon's life. We see where we first see Gideon. He's discouraged. He's disappointed. And he's really disappointed in God, as you read verse 13. But God would work in Gideon's life. We see that God appeared to Gideon as he's threshing wheat. We read there in chapter 6 and verse 11 of the angel of the Lord. And in verse 12, the angel of the Lord appeared unto him and said unto him. In verse 14 and verse 16, this angel of the Lord who appeared unto Gideon and spoke to him is identified as the Lord Himself. The angel of the Lord is the Lord Himself. It's a theophany, an appearance of God in visible form. It's very common in the Old Testament. We see it over and over in the Old Testament, the angel of the Lord. And again, that's a theophany, God appearing in visible form. But I believe it's more than a theophany, it's a Christophany. I believe it's actually an appearance of Jesus Christ, the fleshly form of God. So there's God's remnant in dark and oppressive days. It begins with Gideon. And Gideon had a personal experience of Jesus Christ. When Gideon describes this experience, he said in verse 22, "I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face." That's a personal experience. I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face. So this was something that was very real to Gideon. He had seen God face to face. So he has this experience. God would strengthen Gideon. This is God putting together his remnant. In verse 12, chapter 6, there's a word from God to Gideon. And it is this: "The Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor." The Lord is with thee. In verse 13, we've already read that verse, we see Gideon's doubtful response. Gideon begins to ask God, "If God is with me, then why is all this happening?" And all that does, again, is reveal that Gideon at this time was, again, discouraged, disappointed, and frustrated. But notice verse 14. So you have God's statement to Gideon in verse 12, "The Lord is with thee." You have Gideon's response in verse 13, which is not the proper response. And then in verse 14, "And the Lord," that's that angel of the Lord, "looked upon him." Looked upon him. It was a special look. It was a look that would bring Gideon out of verse 13. Because if Gideon is going to be part of this remnant that God would so mightily use, he can't stay in verse 13. He can't stay in discouragement and disappointment and frustration. He can't live there. He's got to be brought out of that. And the Lord, after Gideon responded, the Lord looked upon him. A look of grace. A look of love. A look of tenderness. But I believe most of all it was a look that gave Gideon assurance. Assurance of what? The Lord is with thee. The Lord is with thee. So it was a look that strengthened him. It was a look that would convince him. The Lord is with thee. Following that look, which convinced Gideon, the Lord is with thee, which assured Gideon, and said, "Go in this thy might." A lot of messages have been preached on that, and most of them are in error. What is Gideon's might? It's the Lord is with thee. That's his might. That's his power. The assurance of that. The Lord looked upon him, giving him that assurance. The Lord is with thee. Go this in thy might. Go in this thy might. God's remnant in dark and oppressive days are a people just like Gideon that are strengthened by God. It's not a weak people. It's a people that have been strengthened by God by having a personal experience with the Lord, seeing Him face to face. The result was Gideon was raised above his circumstances. He was lifted out of verse 13. We read in Psalm 21 and verse 6, "Thou hast made him exceeding glad," not Gideon, but just a general statement. "Thou hast made him exceeding glad with thy countenance." Gideon saw him face to face. Gideon is discouraged. He's anything but glad in verse 13. But as a result of this look, as a result of seeing the Lord, Gideon is made glad. And be sure of this, God's remnant in dark and oppressive days have been lifted above their circumstances and surroundings. And after verse 14, Gideon now lives in a different realm. This is necessary if we're going to be a part of God's remnant. Verse 15, Gideon was humbled by the work that God had done at that moment. And he said unto him, "O my Lord, wherewith shall I save Israel? How am I going to deliver Israel? Behold, my family is poor, Manasseh, the smallest tribe." So he belonged to the smallest tribe, and he was poor. "And I am the least in my father's house. And as I'm the poorest of all my brothers and my sisters, I am the very least." And again, God's remnant in dark and oppressive days are people that have been humbled by God. This was followed by verse 16. "Remember Gideon's might, I am with thee. And the Lord said unto him, surely I will be with thee." In other words, Gideon, you're wondering how this is going to come about. Don't you worry about it. I will be with thee. He didn't tell him how. He didn't tell him how he was going to do it. He just reiterated the promise. I will be with thee. So you have the assurance again of God's presence. There's also the promise of the miraculous. Verse 16. "And thou shalt smite the Midianites as one man." You'll defeat the Midianites just as if they were one person. Not only will you defeat them, this is easy. How does it come about? I am with thee. That's all you need to know, Gideon. I am with thee. That's all he needed. So those who make up this remnant believe that God is with them. And they believe that God, and they believe in the miraculous power of the Lord. Following this, Gideon offered to God. In verses 19 through 21, we see him giving an offering unto the Lord. And so it is again, this remnant. They are people who offer to God. Verse 23, following the offering, "And the Lord said unto him, peace be unto thee. Fear not, thou shalt not die." God's peace came over Gideon, and he's instructed further not to fear. And again, this remnant of God in dark and oppressive days have a peace A peace comes upon them. Based upon this assurance, I am with thee. There comes this peace that passeth understanding. Verse 24, following this, we see then Gideon built an altar there unto the Lord and called it Jehovah Shalom. That is, God is my peace. So he feels this peace come upon him. As a result, his heart was in his heart to worship the Lord. And again, this remnant in dark and oppressive days are people with a heart to worship God. If you don't have a heart to worship God, don't kid yourself. You're not part of the remnant. Have a heart to worship the Lord. Next thing Gideon did by the instruction of God was he tore down the family altar that his father had built. As a result of this, in verse 32, his father called him Jerubbaal, which means contender with Baal. And that's how he's addressed, that's how he's referred to in chapter 7 and verse 1. Jerubbaal, contender with Baal. God's remnant in dark and oppressive days are people who contend with Baal, even when it's in their own family. He had to tear down the altar that his father had built. So he does this. And then Gideon was Holy Spirit empowered. Notice verse 33. Then all the Midianites and the Amalekites and the children of the east were gathered together and went over and pitched in the valley of Jezreel. Gideon could see them there because he's up in Mount Gilead. From chapter 7 and verse 12, you could pretty much come to the conclusion that the Midianites were made up of several hundred thousand individuals. So there they are gathered. And then we read verse 34, But. This would be a time that would cause, under normal circumstances, great fear. But that wasn't the case. But the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon. God's power came upon Gideon. And he blew a trumpet. And the sound that he blew was a call to arms. And God's people knew that they were to gather and fight the enemy. In verse 34 and 35, Gideon is seen calling God's people to stand for the cause of God. And from those who gathered, we see the ones that will not make up the remnant that God will so mightily use. And we also see the ones who would make up the remnant that God would so mightily use. Then the story from here becomes very familiar to all of us. God would sift through Gideon's army. The call goes forth. 32,000 men respond to the call. You say, wow, that's a lot of people. Not really. Among all those who have been so sorely oppressed for 7 years, 32,000 responded to that trumpet call. The entire nation had felt the oppression of the Midianites. The entire nation was suffering terribly. The entire nation was in a state of distress and misery. And though the Midianites had been robbing them of their livelihood for 7 years, and though the entire nation, they wanted to be free. They desired liberation from the tyranny of the enemy. But when it came time to do something, the vast majority refused to step forward for the cause that was at hand. 32,000. That's not very many. When you consider all the Israelites that there were by that time in the land of Canaan, millions. To the vast majority, the call of God left them unstirred, left them unmoved. That's still true today. From a sheer percentage perspective, 32,000 is an unfavorable percentage. And not only that, they were greatly outnumbered by the Midianites, so the odds were also against them. The percentages were against them. Being so outnumbered by the Midianites, that also was against them. So there's Gideon with 32,000 men who have stepped forward for the cause of God. From outward appearance, it seems that they are ready to face the enemy. But in reality, they weren't ready at all. Nor were they fit to be a part of the remnant that God would so mightily use. So there's Gideon, 32,000 men, a very small percentage of those who should have stepped forward and could have. And from a sheer number perspective, 32,000 is nothing compared to the Midianites. The odds appear to be greatly against them. And I'm sure that when Gideon blew that trumpet, the sound of war, the sound to take up arms, I'm sure that he was expecting more than 32,000. When you consider all the people that there were. But where's Gideon's strength? The Lord is with thee. Gideon's strength is not in how many showed up. That's not the might he was to go forth with. Gideon's strength is in the Lord is with thee. And in chapter 7 and verse 2, God informs Gideon that the 32,000 are too many. They're too many. And God instructed Gideon in verse 3 to stand before these 32,000 and say, "Whoever is fearful and afraid," again, they could see the Midianites, "let him return and depart from Mount Gilead." And he barely got the words out of his mouth, and 22,000 men, two-thirds of them, turned and went home. But where's Gideon's strength? The Lord be with thee. The Lord is with thee. Though they saw these 32,000, for a brief moment they felt there was a cause worth fighting for. And they willingly volunteered. As they gathered, it appears that these are serious men. These are dedicated individuals. And again, it's only a small percentage of who should have been there. But the first chance they get, they run home. Again, they could see the Midianites encamped along the valleys, holding all the strategic positions, hemming in the people of God. Seeing such, they became fearful. They became afraid. And Gideon said, whoever's fearful and afraid, you can go home. And off they go. What were they willing to return to? Their manner of living, which had been for the last 7 years, misery. But they were more willing to stay in that lifestyle than to stand up for the cause. These are not the ones that would make up God's remnant. And they're still not. They were afraid, they were fearful and afraid. And they were willing to go back home because they thought more of their own safety and their own well-being than the cause at hand. Another reason they were willing to go back home is because in reality, that's where their heart was. Their heart was not in this battle. Their heart was back home. I've got a wife back home. I've got a daughter. I've got a son. I've got a grandson, a granddaughter. That's where their heart was. They didn't make up part of this remnant that God would use. So it is today. Those aren't the ones. Those who have their hearts somewhere else, they're not the ones who make up this remnant. So when the 32,000 report, that's a very small percentage. But the percentage has now gotten smaller because two-thirds of them leave. So that makes the odds even greater. There's all those Midianites and our percentages just got smaller. But where's Gideon's strength? The Lord is with thee. That was the might that he was to go in. So there's Gideon. He now has 10,000 men. One-third of what he started with. You can say some things, just like you can say some good things about the 32,000. At least they showed up for a few minutes. You can say some things about the 10,000. They did remain true and firm as they watched their friends and acquaintances run back home. You got to give them credit. They did remain through that. But these 10,000, again, are a very small number compared to the enemy forces. Yet in verse 4, God speaks again to Gideon. He says, the people are yet too many. Gideon never protests. Because Gideon has learned now, this isn't where his strength is. It's not where our strength is either. These 10,000, they had more determination. They had more of a willingness for the cause than the 22,000 that ran home. But God would now bring these 10,000 men and Gideon to a body of water. And God instructed Gideon in verse 5 to have the men drink. Now, he didn't tell him. Read verse 5. It's presented wrongly most of the time. He didn't tell them. The ones that do this, I'm not going to use. The ones that do this, I'm going to use. That's not what he told them. He said, Gideon, some are going to do this, some are going to do that. You put them in separate groups. That's all that he was told. Wasn't told why. And he was told that, again, he was to have these men go to this body of water and drink. And God told him some would drink like a dog, lapping with their tongue. That is, they would keep their weapons in one hand, they would reach down with the other, always looking around and drink. But they're always alert to their surroundings. He says, those who do that, I want you to put over here. And there'll be some others. They're going to get to that body of water, they're going to drop their weapons, and they're just going to put their face in and drink. All those who do that, you put over here. So two groups. 9,700 men. When they got to the water, dropped their weapons, fell on their faces, fell on both knees, ignoring everything else. Why? To quench their thirst. These 9,700 men, they were careless. They didn't give much thought to the situation at hand. They did not truly realize the seriousness of the matter. The truth is, when it came right down to it, they were more concerned about their own physical needs than they were the cause of the Lord. And they allowed their own personal needs to cause them to forget the reason they were there. The reason they were there was not to drink, not to satisfy themselves. The reason that they were there was to fight the Midianites. But 9,700 men dropped their weapons, forget everything else, put their face in the water. These are not the ones that God would use. These are not the ones that would make up God's remnant. So the 9,000, so you have these two groups. 9,700 over here, 300 over here. God tells Gideon, verse 8, send the 9,700 to their tents. Tell them they're free to go. And 300 men remained. Of the original 32,000, which again I remind you was quite a minority, a small percentage, only 300 remain. You know what that is? That's less than 1%. Less than 1%. Less than 1% who showed up saying, Gideon, we are with thee in this. We're going to fight the Midianites. We're tired of living this way. When it came right down to it, less than 1%. I don't believe the odds have changed or the percentages have changed that much today. But that's not where our strength is. Our strength is the Lord is with thee. So there's Gideon, 300 men. The Lord says to Gideon in verse 7, Gideon, these are the ones. These are the ones. These are the ones who are ready. These are the ones who are fit for my use. These are the ones that I will use for my glory. Less than 1% of those who showed up. Percentages get smaller when you think about those who didn't show up but should have. All to be numbered with these. This is a remnant. A remnant is a small piece. Romans 11, God has a remnant. God has always had a remnant. But keep in mind, it has always been but a remnant. You say, oh no, I remember when there were great numbers. Yes, and if you would have got right down to it, there would have been less than 1%. Getting right down to it. Don't be deceived. Oh, to be numbered with these. Consider these 300 had personally witnessed only 32,000 men respond to the call. I mean, if you have millions and it's a time of great crisis and you've been suffering for 7 years, you would certainly think that more than 32,000 would show up. But these men witness only 32,000 respond to the call. And they personally witnessed the 32,000 dwindled down to 300. So they personally witnessed 31,700 men return home. And yet, these 300 are compelled to go on. They're compelled to go on. They were not moved by the low percentage of God's people, because they knew that's not where our strength is. Our strength is the Lord is with thee. So when the percentages got down to less than 1%, that didn't move them. The odds now have greatly increased against them. But these 300 were more willing and more burdened about the cause of the Lord than all the others. They no doubt were more affected by the call of God. It's disturbing today, though it shouldn't be. And I speak of myself. Calls go forth, serve God, serve God. And the percentage is very, very low. And sometimes we find ourselves getting discouraged. Is anybody listening? Not very many. Not very many. Does anybody take this seriously? Not very many. Probably less than 1%. But that's not where our strength is. That's not to move us. You say, well, sometimes I just feel like, what's the use? Nobody else cares. No, they don't care. So are you going to stop? Now, how much sense does that make? None. It makes none. The truth is, they don't care. But that shouldn't affect us. We must be compelled to go on. Oh, I've got your back. I'm right there with you. Well, I wish you would have done it next week. You know, I got a birthday party this week. And on it goes.
Well, I'm right there with you. Next time, just let me know. Give me plenty of advance. The more advance notice you give them, the more likely they're not going to be there. Why is that? Because their heart isn't in it. That's being painfully honest. Well, I just don't feel like anybody else cares. Well, there are some that do. But it's not very many. And it's probably less than you and I think. That really, when it gets down to it, are going to be a part of that remnant. But that ought to be our desire. Oh, to be a part of that remnant. These were men of courage. I mean, it takes courage when your numbers get down below 1% of what you started with. It's going to take some courage. It's going to take some commitment, some devotion, some loyalty, some passion. The attitude needs to be, instead of, well, all the others went home, I might as well too. The attitude needs to be, they went home, I got to make up for them. I've got to be even stronger. They don't care, so I've got to care more. That ought to be the attitude. We ought to feel more compelled to go on. These men were consumed with the cause of God. They too had families back home. They too had loved ones back home. They too had affairs back home. But they were consumed with the cause of God. There are people today who want you to think they're the only ones in life that are busy. Everybody's busy. Everybody's got other affairs. But somebody has to be committed and devoted to the cause of the Lord. And 300 men were, plus Gideon. So in face of a powerful enemy and an opposing force, and in the face of mighty barriers and difficulties, these men had to put self aside and were surrendered to the will of God. Willing to put the cause of God ahead of all personal wants, ahead of all personal needs. God help us. The percentages go down. The odds get greater. Again, most of our society today was born and raised under humanism. And they don't think right. Their minds are messed up. So, every day, the percentages are getting lower for those who will stand. And the odds are getting greater. The enemy that we must go up against. But somebody has to be committed enough to say with Joshua, a different case of course, as for me and my house, we're going to serve God. Brother so-and-so might go home. Sister so-and-so might go home. They might take all their kinfolk with them. But for me and my house, we're serving the Lord. That needs to be the attitude. They were willing and determined to go all the way. To go all the way. We need to be a people who are willing, and when it gets right down to it, there aren't many that are willing to go all the way. First of all, what does all the way mean? People have different definitions. Well, it means that I can only give the Lord, I give the Lord 2 hours a week. For them, that's all the way. That's not all the way. All the way means your life. These were willing to go all the way. There aren't many. There aren't many. And the enemy grows in number, so the odds become more and more against us, humanly speaking. So the percentage was small. And though from a numbers perspective, considering the number of the Midianites, the odds were greatly against them. But they really weren't. The odds weren't against them. And the percentages weren't against them. Why? The Lord will be with thee. That changes all the odds right there. That changes everything. We need to realize that. We need to believe. We need to be certain. God is with us. And we're going to stand. God will give us the strength. So these are the ones, 300, out of 32,000, that experienced the victory. They experienced the victory. Oh, I'm sure the others, if you were to sit down and talk with them, oh, I would have been there, but such and such happened back home. And oh, they all could tell a story. Oh, I wish I could have been there. Well, you could have been, but your heart wasn't there. These were the 300 that experienced victory, and they witnessed the power of God. They witnessed it. They saw it. It says that each one stood in their place. There's a message there also. So here we are today. The percentage is small. And I'm here to tell you the percentages will get smaller. And as the enemies band together, their number will get larger. The enemy's forces are getting larger, and the people of God are getting smaller. And sometimes it looks like the odds are greatly stacked against us. Don't forget where your strength is. The Lord will be with thee. Gideon, this is your might. This is your power. Go in that power. We have a great God. Go in this, thy might. Our might is the greatness of God. Do we get disappointed? Yes. Do we get disappointed in people? Yes, all the time. All the time. Do we scratch our heads sometimes in confusion and think, what in the world are they thinking? You know, so I mentioned Facebook this morning. And I realize what time it is. You know something else that Facebook has revealed? What people should be ashamed of, they're not. They were put right on Facebook. I was such and such Sunday morning or Sunday night. They don't even feel the same. They act like there's nothing wrong with it. That's how out of touch they are with spirituality. And that's discouraging. But we can't get stuck there. We can't get stuck there. Because if we do, we'll not be part of this remnant. Our attitude needs to be, God is our strength. And they don't get it. They don't get it. And I'll just be plain honest, they probably never will. But they don't get it. The enemy is beating down their door. And they still don't get it. They're not going to, more than likely. So what should our response be? Well, I might as well go home too. I might as well go to the mall on Sunday too. If they can do it, I can too. Well, what kind of spirituality is that? How many times I've had people tell me, well, you know, others do the same thing. What's that got to do with anything? Nothing. What's that got to do with you and I? Nothing. Is it a disappointment? Yes. But get over it. There's too much at stake to wallow in pity. But be more determined. They have left. They don't get it. God, help me to understand and compel me to go on. Because they don't get it. I need to get it. Because they don't see the seriousness of the matter. We need to. So don't fall in that trap. Well, what's the use? I might as well do the same thing. As soon as that thought comes to our mind, we need to repent. We need to get right with God. That is totally wrong thinking. And it shows a lack of spirituality. So there are many lessons that we learn here from Gideon and these 300 men. To me, it's one of the most remarkable accounts in the Word of God. And like all the Word of God, it is very applicable to our day. Very applicable to our situation. I tell pastors all the time, I remind them of this, the less than 1%. Remember what you're dealing with. Remember what you're dealing with. Probably less than 1%. Maybe not in a church setting, but overall, God's people. Those who profess. I'm not saying less than 1% in this building. That's not what I'm saying. But overall, you take all those who profess to be God's people. I don't think it's a stretch in any way to say there's probably less than 1% who are going to get serious about God. Oh, to be part of that remnant. You know what I believe also? These 300 men, they had to have an appreciation for each other. We ought to appreciate the remnant. The remnant's not our enemy. The remnant's not the problem. We need to appreciate the remnant. Well, you know, Brother Dan, they wear blue shirts and I wear white. Appreciate the remnant. Appreciate the 300 that are going to stand. Well, you know, they like McDonald's and I prefer Burger King. I mean, that's how ridiculous it is. Appreciate the remnant. Oh, to be a part of these. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.